So without horn nor harp or music of men's voices, the great ride into the east began, which the songs of Rohan were busy for many long lives of men thereafter. From dark dun harrow in the dim morning, with thane and captain rode Thengel's son, to Edoras he came, the ancient halls of the mark wardens mist enshrouded, golden timbers were in gloom mantled. Farewell he bade to his free people, hearth and high seat in the hallowed places, where long he had feasted ere the light faded. Forth rode the king, fear behind him, fate before him, fealty kept he. Oaths he had taken, all fulfilled them. Forth rode Theoden 5 nights and days, east and onward rode the Eor Lingas, through fold and fenmarsh and the Firion wood, 6,000 spears to Sun Landing, Munburg the mighty under Mind Olwyn, sea king's city in the south kingdom, foe beleaguered, fire encircled. Doom drove them on, darkness took them, horse and horseman, hoof beats afar, sank into silence, so the songs tell us. Then, since we must look for fell deeds and the need of all our strength, said Eomer, I counsel that we rest now, and set out hence by night, and so time our going, if we come upon the fields when tomorrow is as light as it will be, or when our Lord gives the signal. To this the king assented, and the captains departed. But soon Elfhelm returned. The scouts have found naught to report beyond the Grey Woodlord, he said, save 2 men only, 2 dead men and 2 dead horses. Well, said Eomer, what of it? This lord, they were errand riders of Gondor. Hiergon was one, maybe. At least his hand still clasped the red arrow, but his head was hewn off. And this also, it was seen by the signs that they were fleeing westward when they fell. As I read it, they found the enemy already on the outwall, or assailing it when they returned, and that would be 2 nights ago, if they used fresh horses from the posts, as is their wont. They could not reach the city, and they turned back. Alas, said Theoden, then Denethor has heard no news of our riding, and he will despair of our coming. Need brooks no delay, yet late is better than never, said Eomer. And mayhap in this time shall the old saw be proved truer than ever before, since men spoke with mouth. It was night, and either side of the road the hosts of Rohan was moving silently. Now the road, passing about the skirts of Mind Olwyn, turned southward. Far away and almost straight ahead there was a red glow under the black sky, and the sides of the great mountain loomed dark against it. They were drawing near the Ramas of the Pelennor, but the day was not yet come. The king rode in the midst of the leading company, his household men about him. Elfhelm's Eored came next, and now Merry noticed that Darrenhelm had left his place and in the darkness was moving steadily forward, until at last he was riding just in rear of the king's guard. There came a check. Merry heard voices in front speaking softly. Outriders had come back who had ventured forward almost to the wall. They came to the king. There are great fires, lord, said one. The city is all set about with flame, and the field is full of foes. But all seem drawn off to the assault. As well as we could guess, there are few left upon the outwall, and they are heedless, busy in destruction. Do you remember the wild man's words, lord, said another? I live upon the open wold in days of peace. Weedfare is my name, and to me also the air brings messages. Already the wind is turning. There comes a breath out of the south. There is a sea tang in it, faint though it be. The morning will bring new things. Above the reek it'll be dawn when you pass the wall. If you speak truly, Weedfare, then may you live beyond this day in years of blessedness, said Theoden. He turned to the men of his household who were near, and he spoke now in a clear voice, so that many also of the riders of the first Eored heard him. Now is the hour come, riders of the mark, sons of Eor. Foes and fire before you and your homes far behind. Yet though you fight upon an alien field, the glory that you reap there shall be your own forever. Oaths ye have taken, now fulfill them all, to lord and land and league of friendship. Men clashed spear upon shield. Eomer, my son, you lead the first Eored, said Theoden. It shall go behind the king's banner in the center. Elfhelm, lead your company to the right when we pass the wall. And Grimbold shall lead his towards the left. Let the other companies behind follow these 3 that lead as they have chance. Strike wherever the enemy gathers. Other plans we cannot make, for we know not yet how things stand upon the field. Forth now, and fear no darkness. The leading company rode off as swiftly as they could, but it was still deep dark, whatever change Wheatfeller might forebode. Mary was riding behind Dernholm, clutching with the left hand, while with the other he tried to loosen his sword in its sheath. He felt now bitterly the truth of the old king's words. In such a battle, what would you do, Mary Addock? Just this, he thought, encumber a rider, and hope at best to stay in my seat and not be pounded to death by galloping hoofs. It was no more than a league to where the outlaws had stood. They soon reached them, too soon for Mary. Wild cries broke out, and there was some clash of arms, but it was brief. The orcs busy about the walls were few and amazed, and they were quickly slain or driven off. Before the ruin of the north gate in the Rammas, the king halted again. First, Eorred drew up behind him and about him on either side. Dernholm kept close to the king, though Elfholm's company was away on the right. Grimbold's men turned aside and passed round to a great gap in the wall further eastward. Mary peered from behind Dernholm's back. Far away, maybe 10 miles or more, there was a great burning. But between it and the riders, lines of fire blazed in a vast crescent, at the nearest point less than a league distant. He could make out little more on the dark plain, and as yet he neither saw any hope of morning, nor felt any wind, changed or unchanged. Now silently the host of Rohan moved forward into the field of Gondor, pouring in slowly but steadily like the rising tide through breaches in a dike, with men of thought secure. But the mind and will of the black captain were bent wholly on the falling city, and as yet no tidings came to him, warning that his designs held any flaw. After a while the king led his men away somewhat eastward, to come between the fires of the siege and the outer fields. Still they were unchallenged, and still Théoden gave no signal. At last he halted once again. The city was now nearer. A smell of burning was in the air, and a very shadow of death. The horses were uneasy. But the king sat upon Snowmane, motionless, gazing upon the agony of Minas Tirith, as if stricken suddenly by anguish or by dread. He seemed to shrink down, cowed by age. Merry himself felt as if a great weight of horror and doubt had settled on him. His heart beat slowly. Time seemed poised in uncertainty. They were too late. Too late was worse than never. Perhaps Théoden would quail, bow his old head, turn, slink away to hide in the hills. Then suddenly Merry felt it at last, beyond doubt, a change. Wind was in his face. Light was glimmering. Far, far away in the south, the clouds could be dimly seen, as remote grey shapes rolling up, drifting. Morning lay beyond them. But at that same moment there was a flash, as if lightning had sprung from the earth beneath the city. For a searing second it stood dazzling far off in black and white, its topmost tower like a glittering needle. And then as the darkness closed again, there came rolling over the fields a great boom. At that sound the bent shape of the king sprang suddenly erect. Tall and proud he seemed again, and rising in his stirrups he cried in a loud voice, more clear than any there had ever heard a mortal man achieve before, "Arise, arise, riders of Théoden! Fell leads awake, fire and slaughter! Spear shall be shaken, shield be splintered, sword day, red day, ere the sun rises! Ride now, ride to Gondor!" With that he seized a great horn from Guthlaf, his banner-bearer, and he blew such a blast upon it that it burst asunder. And straightway all the horns in the host were lifted up in music, and the blowing of the horns of Rohan in that hour was like a storm upon the plain, and a thunder in the mountains. "Ride now, ride now, ride to Gondor!" Suddenly the king cried to Snowmane, and the horse sprang away. Behind him his banner blew in the wind, white horse upon a field of green, but he outpaced it. After him thundered the knights of his house, but he was ever before them. Eomer rode there, the white horse tail on his helm, floating in his speed. On the front of the first Eorred roared like a breaker foaming to the shore, but Théoden could not be overtaken. Fey he seemed, or the battle fury of his fathers ran like new fire in his veins. And he was born upon Snowmen like a god of old, even as Oromi the Great in the Battle of the Valar when the world was young. His golden shield was uncovered, and lo, it shone like an image of the sun, and the grass flamed into green above the white feet of his steed. For morning came, morning in a wind from the sea, and darkness was removed, and the hosts of Mordor wailed, and a terror overtook them, and they fled and died, and the hoofs of wrath rode over them. And then all the host of Rohan burst into song, and they sang as they slew, for the joy of battle was on them, and the sound of their singing that was fair and terrible came even to the city. No few had fallen, renowned or nameless, captain or soldier. For it was a great battle, and the full count of it no tale was told. So long afterward a maker in Rohan said in his song of the mounds of Munburg, we heard the horns in the hills ringing, the swords shining in the south kingdom. Steeds went striding to the stoning land as wind in the morning. War was kindled. There Theoden fell, Fengling mighty, to his golden halls and green pastures in the northern fields, never returning. High lord of the host. Harding and Guthlaf, Dunheron, Darwin, a doughty Grimbold, Herifaron, Herubrand, Horn, and Fastred fought and fell there in a far country. In the mounds of Munburg and a mould they lie with their league fellows, lords of Gondor. Neither Hirluin the fair to the hills by the sea, nor Forlong the old of the flowering vales ever to Arnach, to his own country, returned in triumph. Nor the tall bowmen Derufin and Duilin to their dark waters, mirrors of Morthond on the mountain shadows. Death in the morning and a day's ending, lords took and lowly. Long now they sleep under grass in Gondor by the great river. Grey now as tears gleaming silver, red then it rolled, roaring water. Foam dyed with blood flamed at sunset. As beacons mountains burned at evening, red fell the dew in Ramasechor.
There the bend it was cut deep through a crag of old weathered stone, once long ago vomited from the mountain's furnaces. Panting under his load, Sam turned the bend, and even as he did so, out of the corner of his eye, he had a glimpse of something falling from the crag, like a small piece of black stone that had toppled off as he passed. A sudden weight smote him, and he crashed forward, tearing the backs of his hands that still clasped his master's. Then he knew what had happened. Above him as he lay, he heard a hated voice.
Wicked master, it hissed. Wicked master. Cheats us, cheats us. Cheats Smeagol, Orm. He mustn't go that way. He mustn't hurt Precious. Give it to Smeagol, yes. Give it to us. Give it to us.
With a violent heave, Sam rose up. At once he drew his sword, but he could do nothing. Gollum and Frodo were locked together. Gollum was tearing at his master, trying to get at the chain and the ring. This was probably the only thing that could have roused the dying embers of Frodo's heart and will, an attack, an attempt to wrest his treasure from him by force. He fought back with a sudden fury that amazed Sam and Gollum also. Even so, things might have gone far otherwise if Gollum himself had remained unchanged. But whatever dreadful path, lonely and hungry and waterless, he had trodden, driven by a devouring desire and a terrible fear, they had left grievous marks on him. He was a lean, starved, haggard thing, all bones and tight-drawn, sallow skin. A wild light flamed in his eyes, but his malice was no longer matched by his old griping strength. Frodo flung him off and rose up, quivering. Down! Down! He gasped, touching to his hand to his breast, so that beneath the cover of his leather shirt he clasped the ring. Down, you creeping thing, and out of my path! Your time is at an end. You cannot betray me or slay me now. Then suddenly, as before, under the eaves of the Emyn Muir, Sam saw these two rivals with other vision, a crouching shape, scarcely more than the shadow of a living thing, a creature now wholly ruined and defeated, yet filled with a hideous lust and rage. And before it stood stern, untouchable now by pity, a figure robed in white, but at its breast it held a wheel of fire. Out of the fire there spoke a commanding voice, "Begone, and trouble me no more. If you touch me ever again, you shall be cast yourself into the fire of doom." Crouching shape backed away, terror in its blinking eyes, and yet at the same time insatiable desire. Then the vision passed, and Sam saw Frodo standing, hand on his breast, his breath coming in great gasps, and Gollum at his feet, resting on his knees, with his wide splayed hands upon the ground. "Look out!" cried Sam, "he'll spring!" He stepped forward, brandishing his sword. Quick, master, he gasped. Go on, no time to lose. I'll deal with him. Go on. Frodo looked at him as if at one now far away. Yes, I must go on, he said. Farewell, Sam. This is the end at last. On Mount Doom, doom shall fall. Farewell. He turned and went on, walking slowly but erect up the climbing path. Now, said Sam, at last I can deal with you. He leapt forward with drawn blade ready for battle. But Gollum did not spring. He fell flat upon the ground and whimpered. Don't kill us, he wept. Don't hurt us with nasty, cruel steel. Let us live, yes, live just a little longer. Lost, lost, we're lost. And when precious goes, we'll die, yes, die into the dust. He clawed up the ashes of his path with his long, fleshless fingers. Dust, he hissed. Sam's hand wavered. His mind was hot with wrath and the memory of evil. It would be just to slay this treacherous, murderous creature, just and many times deserved. Also, it seemed, the only safe thing to do. But deep in his heart, there was something that restrained him. He could not strike this thing lying in the dust, forlorn, ruinous, utterly wretched. He himself, though only for a little while, had borne the ring. And now dimly he guessed the agony of Gollum's shriveled mind and body, enslaved to that ring, unable to find peace or relief ever in life again. But Sam had no words to express what he felt. Oh, curse you, you stinking thing, he said. Go away, be off. I don't trust you, not as far as I could kick you, but be off, or I shall hurt you, yes, with nasty, cruel steel. Gollum got up on all fours and backed away for several paces. Then he turned, and as Sam aimed a kick at him, he fled away down the path. Sam gave no more heed to him. He suddenly remembered his master. He looked up the path and could not see him. As fast as he could, he trudged up the road. If he had looked back, he might have seen, not far below, Gollum turn again, and then, with a wild light of madness glaring in his eyes, come, swiftly but warily, creeping on behind, a slinking shadow among the stones. The path climbed on. Soon it bent again, and with a last eastward course, passed in a cutting along the face of the cone, and came to the dark door in the mountainside, the door of the Samath Naur. Far away now, rising towards the south, the sun, piercing the smokes and haze, burned ominous, a dull, bleared disk of red. But all Mordor lay about the mountain like a dead land, silent, shadow-folded, waiting for some dreadful stroke. Sam came to the gaping mouth and peered in. It was dark and hot. A deep rumbling shook the air. Frodo! Master! He called. There was no answer. For a moment he stood, his heart beating with wild fears, and then he plunged in. A shadow followed him. At first he could see nothing. In his great need, he drew out once more the phial of Galadriel, but it was pale and cold in his trembling hand, and threw no light into that stifling dark. He was come to the heart of the realm of Sauron, and the forces of his ancient might, greatest in Middle-earth. All other powers were here subdued.
And before the sun had fallen far from the noon, out of the east there came a great eagle flying, and he bore tidings beyond hope from the lords of the west, crying, Sing now, ye people of the Tower of Anor, for the realm of Sauron is ended forever, and the Dark Tower is thrown down. Sing and rejoice, ye people of the Tower of Gard, for your watch hath not been in vain, and the black gate is broken, and your king hath passed through, and he is victorious. Sing and be glad, all ye children of the west, for your king shall come again, and he shall dwell among you all the days of your life. And the tree that was withered shall be renewed, and he shall plant it in the high places, and the city shall be blessed. Sing, all ye people. And the people sang in all the ways of the city.
Lassis Wurinan in Yaru notin arbiral meral alderon
Ignabilintiul malvani ermiorum arilles immeru voriva. Andune bella vardu teluma, nullo in iassent intilari elene, o mario aritari lirinan. Si mani uldanen in quantu va, ansit in tale vardo eulosseo, ve fagna mare delentari ortneari gli artierum nulla velum nulle. As in dar noriello caita mornie, i val malinari memet, arisien tu pocala chiglio mirioiale, si vanno a narrom lo vanno a valimar. Na Marie, na Iruvalia valimar, na Elie Iruvalia, na Mor.